Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Four-star Army General Ann Dunwoody has a story to tell. She was recruited into the Women's Army Corps at the end of the Vietnam era, watched women join a military demoralized by the uncertainties of those days. She became the first general in charge of the Army's antiquated logistics back in 2000, and after 9/11, she was tested as much as any officer in the military. Ann Dunwoody eventually became the first woman four-star general in the U.S. Army. Her new memoir is A Higher Standard: Leadership Strategies from America's Four-Star General. She was delightful and candid, and yesterday when we got backed up in the studio, she told me with a wink, "I admire your courage, son. Keeping a four-star waiting in the green room, never do that." The general is also quite a character.
Yeah, I came in 1975, and we still had the WAC Corps. So I joined the WACs, Women's Army Corps. And shortly after that, they disbanded the Women's Army Corps, and we began this integration of women into the regular Army. And so my first assignment as part of this integration of women no longer in the WAC Corps but in regular Army was to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, as a platoon leader with Sergeant First Class Wendell Bowen. And I was not committed to the Army. I joined the Army because they offered me a lot of money during my senior year in college, $500 a month with a two-year commitment, allowed me to jump out of airplanes and going to commission as a second lieutenant. So even though my family was steeped in military history, I was going to be a coach and a phys ed major. Sergeant Bowen, when I met him, embraced me and told me he was going to make me the best platoon leader, not the best female platoon leader, the best platoon leader in the Army. And he was from Vietnam, and you remember back then we were kind of a broken, hollow army, but there's nothing broken about Sergeant Wendell Bowen. And he taught me what right looked like. He taught me to never walk by a mistake or you just set a new low standard. He was a professional, and he's the reason I stayed longer than my initial 2 years.
So the signal from him was, you know, you got to go along to get along. That wasn't that. Because other women, and they sat in that chair that you're sitting in right now from the Army, talk about horrible stories of you got to go along with commanding officers who insist on sort of sexual sort of kinds of things. And the Army has had huge problems with that. The military has. How did you sort of confront that in your own career? And it sounds like Bowen gave you a whole bunch of weapons to deal with.
I think first it starts in your family.
Yep.
And I came from a values-based family, you know, devout mom, Catholic mom, a dad who's a war hero himself, and five brothers and sisters. So I came in the Army out of a values-based system. What I realized is that the military is really a values-based institution too, if you enforce the standards. It's all about standards. It's all about discipline. And it's all about good order. And Wendell taught me from – you know, not wearing your headgear, then you correct that soldier. And if you don't, it's a slippery slope. And that's all standards. It could be picking up trash. It could be watching a soldier do stuff. Not, we didn't have computers back then, but today's playing Facebook or games and not doing their work. That you say you're supposed to be working. And you correct these things. You don't ignore them. And the military is a self-policing organization. If we're not policing ourselves, that's in itself another challenge. So I always felt and very comfortable about it because Sergeant Bowen showed me. Now, we're going to inspect the troops. Ma'am, they're not ready for your inspection yet. They don't meet the standard. I'm not going to waste your time. That's the kind of NCO he was.
Did a woman officer ever confide in you about things that she knew were wrong, that were going on, and wanted your trust?
This is strange. I never worked for a female officer before in my life because we were just beginning this integration, so there were. So I worked only for men who either believed in me or didn't, and fortunately most did. Now, I've had younger females work for me, and they have confided or they have made complaints about behavior that was inappropriate, and you have to investigate. You can't ever turn the other way. There may be nothing there. There may be something there. But you have to, and you owe it to that individual, to check out the circumstances and then enforce. You have to have people accountable. And I think that's we're wrestling with this as an Army now, holding people accountable for their actions and following up on what that accountability is.
Take it out of the chain of command or?
Absolutely not. I'm not. I appreciate what McCaskill, Senator McCaskill and Senator Gillibrand are doing to highlight the significance of the issue. One assault is too many. But I personally believe, and having spent half of my career in command billets, that the commander must be accountable and responsible. The easiest thing to do is take someone out of command billet if you don't believe that they're capable and worthy of the privilege of command. It's not a right, it's a privilege. And if they abuse that privilege, they don't deserve to be commanding in this great army of ours.
So what's the lesson from your four stars and being at really the top and seeing the Pentagon really have some difficulty with both of these conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq? And, you know, maybe by the end of it, logistics is not the worst problem, even though at the beginning it probably was the worst problem when you were there.
I think, you know, logistics, we've come a long way. And if you talk to folks that have been over this, probably the two biggest areas we've had a transformation as a result of these wars is medical and our ability to, you know, keep people alive, and logistics, getting the stuff they need, when they need it, how much they need it, and how quickly they need it. I think from – you have to – you know this. Our military is – works for our civilian leadership. And I think what I do believe is our leaders always – and they – fully provide their best advice and counsel to civilian leadership. And then at the end of the day, our civilian leadership is responsible for those decisions.
But the uniformed and the civilian planets are drifting apart, it seems like, in America. And you write about it in here.
Yep. My toughest job in the military was my 3 years in the Pentagon as the G4. And that friction that existed and trying to bridge that, because I believe that with communication, collaboration, cooperation, we as a team, and we are a team, that you have to embrace them. You might have differences, but you got to talk about them. There's going to be some compromise sometimes. There may not be compromise. And if you can't come to agreement, then you have personal choices about what you do.
But America at large doesn't get involved in the military. Very few people serve. It's a huge story. It's a huge issue for all Americans. But we're as isolated from our military as we've ever been.
Yeah. Less than 1% of the military will ever – I mean, American population will ever serve. That's why I'm really proud to be on a leadership council, which is trying to institute and incorporate a national service. Not everyone's cut out for the military, but everyone, I believe, can do something to give back this great country.
General Ann Dunwoody, the first woman to become a four-star general in the U.S. Army, whose new memoir is A Higher Standard, Leadership Strategies from America's Four-Star General. Thanks so much.
Thank you.